Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have an interview with Stan Morey. And Stan used to be a judge for the AAU in Florida way back in the 1970s and 1980s. And so we're talking to Stan about some of the old days of bodybuilding. Stan was around when Robbie Robinson made his stage debut back in 1972 in Florida. And he also got to know Arnold Schwarzenegger and Frank Zane and Jim Haislop. So Stan's got some good stories to talk about from the old days of bodybuilding. So we're going to talk to Stan in a minute. Before we get to our interview with Stan, I want to also mention that we are sponsored by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. Use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. I got cellulitis on my ankle last night. So somehow I got that from work. I don't know if I got a spider bite or what, but I had to go to the emergency room last night. That's why the show is up a little late this week. So they gave me some antibiotics, and hopefully that will cure it. So it kind of put a wrinkle in everything. That's about it. After our interview with Stan, I got a couple of articles from Pat Comer, one of our loyal listeners. And Pat sent me some, I'll read his article here. He sent me a letter in the mail because he sent the articles with it. And he said, "Hey, John, I just listened to your John Lloyd interview. Another great one. I especially like the ending where John talks of the heart damage done to the oversized bodybuilders. Anyway, a listener asked for articles on old school diets, and I know you have early in your career connections to Norman Zale. So I sent two articles from Iron Man magazine. First one is called Now That You Have Bulked Up by Norman Zale, which was in the Iron Man magazine issue of January 1976. And the other one is Golden Nuggets for the Weight Man by Norman Zale from Iron Man September 1983. I really enjoy your articles at the end of the podcast. The chapter from Pumping Iron was great. And you might consider reading the whole book chapter by chapter. That's a great idea, Pat. So Pat sent me these articles. He copied them and sent them to me. So I'm going to read one of them after our interview with Stan Morey. So stay tuned for that if you want some old school articles from Iron Man magazine. Norman Zale used to be a contest promoter. He used to train, I believe, at the Leaning Tower YMCA. I think the Duncan YMCA was around first. That's where Bob Guida and Sergio Oliva used to train. And then I think that closed, and then everybody went over to the Leaning Tower YMCA, if I'm correct. The reason it was called the Leaning Tower YMCA, they actually had a tower out in front of the gym that was leaning over, like the Tower of Pisa. So anyways, Norman Zale was actually the judge at my very first contest when I was 16 years old. And he was kind of a strange-looking fellow, really white-looking, kind of skinny, kind of nerdy-looking, but he had a lot of knowledge about nutrition, and he used to write articles for Iron Man magazine all the time. So we'll read one of those after our interview with Stan. And that's about it. Nothing else really going on in my world. I've just been working so much, and I'm going to Chicago this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that. My cousin's son is getting married, so I'll be flying out on Saturday and coming home on Tuesday. So next week's interview on Bodybuilding Legends podcast might be a little bit late also next week. But I'm looking forward to seeing my family again. I haven't seen them since Christmas, and looking forward to taking a couple days off work. We did get a couple emails, so I appreciate you guys sending me emails. If you want to send any emails about the show or about the podcast, to send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will get them right here. This first one is from Lee, and he said, "Hey, John, as always, great podcast. I love the John Lloyd interview. Very informative. Great stories, as usual. In terms of the female series, what about Linda Murray and Corey Everson as well? Talking about their training, diets, etc., and their thoughts on the sport today. Also, if possible, Gary Stridham, because his name always comes up as he is on Facebook, and Rick Wayne would be cool. Love the show. Keep up the awesome work, and I would just love to hear more about how these Golden Age bodybuilders train and ate, as today the new generation doesn't talk about it. Cheers." And then this one is from Mark Pacheco, and Mark says, "You already know this, but five epic interviews would be Dave Dupree, Dale Adrian, Clinton Barile, and Cal Scalak, all from California, and also Jim Haislop." Yeah, Dave Dupree, I don't have any information on him. I don't know where I would get a hold of him. I don't see him on social media. Neither, same thing with Dale Adrian. I think Clinton Barile may be on Facebook, so that's a good suggestion. I'll look into that. I think I might have messaged him on Facebook before, so I'll try that again. That's a good suggestion because he was around in the 1970s. Kalman Scalak would be like my dream interview because he was my idol when I was growing up. But I talked to Sean Ray about that. I even told Sean Ray I'd buy him dinner if he can hook me up with Cal Scalak for an interview. But he said Cal definitely does not want to talk about bodybuilding, which is a shame. Same thing with Muhammad McAway. Muhammad McAway, I tried reaching him. He just was very curt with me, and he just said, "I do not want to do an interview, period." I tried him a couple times. Jim Haislop actually lives out here in Tampa. But Jim went through some family tragedy about a year ago, so I don't think he wants to do an interview, at least not for a while. And Rick Wayne I was talking to about a year ago, but he kind of dropped off, so I could try to reach John Balick and see if we could get a hold of Rick Wayne again. Gary Stridham, I just talked to Tom Terwilliger today because I sent an email to Gary Stridham last week, and he never responded. And he said Gary does not want to do it until he finishes his book. So everybody's writing a book, and they don't want to do interviews until the book is over. But I also asked him if he could hook me up with Matt Mendenhall, and he said Matt Mendenhall just had surgery on his back, so he is probably recuperating now, so maybe that'll work out. And I just saw a video from Lonnie Keeper had a show this last weekend in California, and it was a very successful show, a lot of people. And one of the female competitors, I think she was in figure or bikini, her name was Joey Folco. That's J-O-I-E, I think. Joey, she's a girl. Well, her dad is Joey Folco, who was Teenage Mr. USA in 1978. So he was right there, and he came on and did the interview with his daughter, who's very lovely. And his daughter is also a singer, and that's how she makes her living. She's a singer. And so they did a duet together, which was really cool on camera for Lonnie. So I contacted Joey, and he was immediately said, "Yeah, let's do it." You know, he wants to talk about the old days. So hopefully I'll get to talk to him later this week, and maybe we can get that interview on in another week or two. Also got a hold of Russ Testo. If you guys remember Russ Testo, he used to do these amazing posing routines around the late 1970s, early 1980s. I think he was actually at the Olympia one year as a guest poser and just choreographed these posing routines to music. So great. It was very entertaining. Russ was a natural bodybuilder, never took steroids, made really his mark on the sport by doing his posing routines and not by his competition, although he did compete also. He's always in shape. And he got to one point where he was guest posing all the time. It seemed like almost every weekend he was guest posing somewhere in the country or somewhere in the world because he was so famous. So hopefully we can get Russ on the show too pretty soon. And I want to mention also it was Rachel McLeish's birthday this last week. So I sent Rachel a happy birthday wishes on Facebook and she responded. And she still looks great. I think she's 63. About so she still looked fantastic. So that's about it in my world. Nothing much, just working a lot, which is not fun. But I also want to mention before we get to our interview with Stan Morey that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And they offer, of course, testosterone replacement, hormone replacement, but they also offer injectable amino acids, and they have a lot of different stuff. So if you're feeling like you're not 100% anymore, you're getting older, then definitely give them a call or at least check them out. Mention that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you not only a free consultation, they'll also give you 20% off your order. And they also have a new product I want to mention called the Magic Pill. It's developed and backed by science. It's a formula that was made by chemists and expert formulators who are working with Florida Alternative Medicine. It's a revolutionary fat-burning product getting rave reviews from athletes all over the country. And a month's supply of this amazing fat loss pill and thermogenic is $39.99. So call Florida Alternative Medicine today at 813-922-8939, and you can order yours. All right, that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Stan Morey, and I want to thank Richard Baldwin for setting this up because I guess Stan was kind of hesitant about doing this interview. He said that he sort of got a bad taste in his mouth from bodybuilding. He said the sport has changed, and he talks a lot about the politics and stuff. So you're going to hear all that in our interview. But I just thought it was cool to talk to him because he was around when Robbie first made his debut in bodybuilding, which was really must have been amazing to see. And he also knew, like I said, Arnold and Jim Haislop and Frank Zane way back in the 60s and 70s. So he's got a lot of great stories. So hope you enjoy it. Here's our interview with Stan Morey. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my special guest this week is Stan Morey. And Stan was a judge in the Florida area, and then he also became a promoter, and he was around some of the real legends of the sport, like Robbie Robinson and Frank Zane and Jim Haislop and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I'm glad to talk to you on the phone, Stan. Welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
I'm glad I'm doing it. I've avoided it, you know, because of everything that happened, but Richard Baldwin told me I got to do it.
All right. Thanks to Richard. Well, Stan, talk a little bit about your life. I know you sent me a book you wrote, so I got a little background on your life. But
it really doesn't say everything, but it started out. I lived in Spanish Harlem. I'm half Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. And when I was young, I used to go in the basement of the building, and there was a young kid that worked out, a Puerto Rican kid named Carlos. Mm-hmm. And we used to use broomstick paint cans, and we'd put water in them, and, you know, that's what we used. And but I lost track of them. I moved to Tampa. I was on a scholarship. Mm-hmm. And so I came down here, and I was taking a music appreciation class. And I sat down, and all of a sudden, this man sat next to me was the biggest man I had ever seen, and I was in awe because I was a little skinny kid, mm-hmm. and his name was Harry Smith, and he had won the Junior Mr. America, and he had a health club, mm-hmm. and we got to be friends, and he invited me to come visit his health club, so I went. But he told me, he said, you can't join until you can bench press 135.
Okay.
I couldn't do it. It took me almost a year before I could do it. But finally I joined.
Now, how old were you at this point, Stan?
I was probably 16.
Okay. And what year was this?
This was, 1961, 62, okay. Right in there.
And that was the famous Harry Smith who owned Harry Smith's health club, right, in Tampa.
Yeah, yeah. He was a wrestler. He was known as Gentleman Harry. But he became sort of my dad, because I never had one, so he was my dad. But where I lived, to go to the gym was just a really long distance, so I ended up moving to Tampa Health Gym, which mm-hmm. was owned by Dick Fudge.
Oh, yeah.
And there I worked out with Frank Zane.
Wow.
Jim Haislip. You know, really, some really dynamite people. John Neese, of course, was there at the time. Mm-hmm. And we became really good friends. But Frank and Jim never really meshed. So Frank ended up moving to Harry's gym. and worked out there.
So Frank and Jim really didn't get along, or they just couldn't train together?
Well, you know, Jim would win every contest they were in. Frank would never beat him. And, you know, you had that little bit of jealousy involved.
Yeah, yeah.
And Fudge was enamored with Haislip. And, of course, Haislip went on to win a Mr. Florida and finally won the Mr. America.
Yeah.
And came back. But about that time, Steve Reeves had retired.
Okay.
Weider was looking for somebody to kind of fill that spot. And, boy, he thought Jim Haislip was it. Here was a six-foot blonde, blue-eyed, movie star looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he invited Jim to come to California. So Jim goes out there with Dick Fudge. He got scared to death. He's all the homosexuality and stuff. He didn't know how to deal with it. Jim was a real country boy, so he fled back to Tampa, and he said the heck with Weider. So Weider didn't know what to do. And so he was looking to see who he could find. And he called me and he said, "Stan, what do you think?" I said, "Hell, I don't know." I said, "I met this guy, this teenage kid at the NABBA, named Arnold Schwarzenegger." I said, "He can hardly speak English. He's not that great. He really didn't look that good at that time." He said, "But the guy just is really wants to get ahead." I said, "This guy might be the one for you."
Hmm.
So, but
now, when did you see Arnold at the NABBA?
That was when he had won the Teenage Mr. Universe. So that had to be probably in the 60s.
So you were over there? 60s. You were over there in London?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
And but Schwarzenegger, I hate to say it, a little bit anti-Semitic, and he really didn't want to have too much to do with Joe.
Really?
And so Joe wanted him. So he ends up staging a bodybuilding show in Miami.
Right.
And Frank Zane ends up winning it by half a point, which is impossible. But Weider just wanted to show Arnold that if he wanted to be in his pond, he had to deal with him.
Mm.
But Arnold never signed a personal service contract with Weider. He found somebody else that kind of sponsored him. And I can't remember his name right off. He owned one of the big vitamin companies. And he came with Franco. And really, he made his first million as a bricklayer. Franco was a bricklayer. So they started in the real estate in that Santa Monica area. Made a fortune. And
so you're saying when Arnold came to California, eventually he wasn't really sponsored by Weider?
Well, you know, they worked together, but he never signed with Weider. In other words, he wasn't obligated contractually with Weider. And but like I say, Weider needed him. Of course, you know, Arnold was a guy. He was a driven guy. This guy was going to get ahead no matter what. And you know, most people think that Arnold was not very smart at that time. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
The other thing about him was working with bodybuilders, if you loan him a dollar, you never saw the dollar back. Arnold was always good about that. If you loan him a dollar, he gave you a dollar back.
Oh, really?
And so, you know, we got to be fairly decent friends.
Hmm.
But I ended up, you know, I used to work out and entered some small shows and won a Mr. Tampa, small things.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I got a flyer for a Mr. Florida in 1971 in Miami, held by John Meese and Peter Potter.
Hey, before we go into that, Sam, tell me a little bit more about Harry's gym, because you said you trained over there when you were a teenager, right?
Okay.
So what was that like? I never saw it. I live in Tampa now myself, but I never got to see Harry's gym.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I moved here from Chicago.
I call the gyms now, like Hollywood Planet, perfume factories.
Yeah.
His place was, if you walked in, you're liable to smell a fart and perfume. You know? So it was a dungeon, you know, mm-hmm. very primitive. And Harry was a unique guy. He didn't want to get him mad. I remember one day he had a police officer that owed him dues, and the officer came in, went in to change. Harry got mad, went into the gym, picked the guy up by the neck and had passed and threw him out in the parking lot.
Really? Wow.
That's the kind of guy, you know, and that's the type of gym we had in those days.
Right, you know, right. Just so this, totally is the, different. This is the 60s, right? Early 60s, right. Mid-60s, yeah.
And I opened my gym in 1971, and actually it was called The Dungeon. And
oh, really?
Yeah. But, you know, it became famous. It was just a little tiny place. Mm-hmm. I started the powerlifting because I was AAU powerlifting chairman and also physique chairman. So I had the first region 4 powerlifting championship. And we won actually the region 4 3 years in a row, won the state championship 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. We had a world record holder, Pat O'Brien, in a deadlift. It really became really good and started having a lot of really good bodybuilders.
Yeah. And how big was your gym back then, Stan?
Repeat that again.
How big was your gym back then?
The first one was probably 2,000 square feet.
Okay.
It was small.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I had people like Ferrigno, Platts worked out there, Grimkowski.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I threw Platts out, actually.
Why?
Because he did not respect my gym and the weights. He would just fling them, you know. Mm-hmm. And finally, I just said the heck with it. I threw him out. And the other reason was he was living with a guy named Juan Valdez, which mm-hmm. we used to call the fairy godfather, the Tampa fairy, you mm-hmm. know. But he used to come to the gym and hang out. And somehow Sprague and Mannion didn't want me around. After the 1978 Sports Act, they started taking over, calling out the NPC and the AAU, and they started blackmailing, like, Ralph Countryman of the AAU, mm-hmm. setting him up because he was homosexual. And, you know, I could see the handwriting on the wall. Mm-hmm. The other thing was that Sprague had gotten the sanction for the Mr. America from the AAU in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So he had, out in California, had a parade, elephants and all that stuff, you know.
Right.
But when it came time to pay the sanction, he didn't pay it. Mm. The AAU said, you owe us this money. He said, no. He said, I didn't have the Mr. America. I had the American Bodybuilding Championships. So he refused to pay the sanction fee.
Mm.
And then the stupid AAU gives him the sanction the next year.
It was in Cincinnati.
Again, he doesn't pay.
Right.
You know, it was unbelievable. Now, Sprague was known in the gay world as Colt. He was a real famous, you know, model and other things, which I don't want to talk about. But he wanted to get rid of me. So
why did they want to get rid of you?
Well, because they figured out was too much trouble for what they wanted to do, and that I was trying to keep the AAU above water, and they wanted to get rid of the AAU.
Okay.
And so they knew I was probably the force for the AAU at that time, so they wanted to just get rid of me somehow. So they got the guy we call Juan Valdez, they got him to promote a show called the Southeastern USA.
Mm-hmm.
They had Doug Beaver, Lance Dreher, Tom Platts, Frank Cole. They had all these people. I don't know where they got the money to bring them here.
Guest closers, you mean?
Yeah. And Sprague and Mannion actually came to the show. And I came because I was the AAU guy, so I had to be there. But that was the beginning. Then they tried with Frank Coulter, which was a bodybuilder.
Yeah, I know.
Had Frank him put on a show. It didn't go well. So that didn't go well.
Mm-hmm. So this was in the late 70s, then, when the MPC was just starting then, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Why didn't you want to go on board with the MPC, Stan? You just were all AAU guy.
Well, you know, Frank liked me. Frank actually went with me when I did my seminars. He would guest pose for me, so we were fairly close. And he didn't like Sprague. He didn't like Mannion, and he really was not that interested in promotion or anything. He was just interested in making money with his gym, which he did. And but in 1982, Mace would not relinquish to Mr. Florida. So I held AAU Mr. Florida in Tampa in 1982, but he held one MPC in Miami.
Okay.
All of a sudden, I get a lawsuit. Meese and the MPC sued me for trademark violation. They claim that the AAU had relinquished the Mr. titles and that I was in violation of the trademark. They knew they couldn't win. In my mind, I should have known what was happening. They just wanted to bankrupt me.
Take it to court.
But I was stupid enough to fight it. It took a while. I won. But they were really upset about that. And so Meese was a CPA. He had licensed to practice with the IRS. Mm-hmm. He turns me in to the IRS.
Really? Wow.
Claiming that I was laundering millions of illegal drug money. And the IRS is bound to do it. So they come to the gym, arrest me. I had to hire, of course, another expensive IRS lawyer. I was totally exonerated. But it was 5 years of sheer misery. I lost all my friends. They broke into my house. My mother was living with me. They took all her pills and stuff. They went to the bank and closed my accounts. The bank filed charges on me, expecting me to pay my mortgage, and they gave me 30 days to pay my mortgage, or they foreclosed. They closed my bank accounts. I couldn't write a check or anything. I mean, I was, there's no words to describe how I felt. I mean, I was just shot.
Wow.
And, but, you know, all of a sudden, out of the blue, I had gotten a sanction for the 1983 Mr. and Ms. America, and I put it on in Tampa. And NBC had said they would buy, you know, they would pay to film this thing.
Okay.
But they didn't tell me that I was responsible to film it, and I had to give them the finished product.
Really?
Well, I didn't know anybody. But I get a call out of the blue from this place called Domino Productions out of L.A. They said, well, they'd do it, but you've got to give me $20,000 up front. So they come, film it, they disappear.
Did you give them the 20 grand?
I get a phone call from this person and said, well, the guy took the film, went up in a helicopter, and threw the film into the Pacific. I said, what?
Really?
I couldn't believe it. You know, it turned out that this was one of the people from the MPC and stuff that tried to, you know, ruin me. And I was just like totally gone. Yeah. But I got a call from Carlos Rodriguez, and he had gotten in touch with Dennis Stollard in England, and they talked about forming an organization called the World Physique Federation, WPF.
Okay.
And we sponsored in 1984 a Mr. Universe And God, we had teams from Czechoslovakia, Italy. I mean, it really went well. Bill Pearl, Judge, Reg Park was there. Arnold had given us his blessing. And God, it went really well.
What was the name of the organization again, Stan?
But the World Physique Federation. In fact, it actually is still in existence in Europe and Australia.
Where did you hold the Mr. Universe at?
It was in Tucson.
Okay. So Carlos Rodriguez, that was the guy you met when you were a kid.
That was a young guy.
Yeah, that was Carlos Rodriguez.
Right. And serendipity, we meet again.
Wow.
But while we were having the show, Carlos was drinking Coke after Coke after Coke. His stomach was bothering him. I said, Carlos, I said, you ought to go see a doctor. Now, I don't know if you ever met Carlos, but he was a typical Hispanic macho Marine. No way. I'm okay. But the next year, we put on the Mr. Universe and the AAU Mr. America, which Roy Liedlmeyer won. Looked great. But Carlos was really not feeling well.
Rory didn't win the America, did he?
Carlos?
No, Rory.
Rory won our Mr. America.
Oh, you're Mr. America. Okay.
Yeah. It was the AAU Mr. America. And,
well, didn't Joe Mico win it in 84?
He won it in 84, and Liedlmeyer won it a year after that.
Well, that was Antorino, right? Antorino won 85.
Yeah. And he should have won a Mr. Universe, but he chose not to compete. He probably would have won that easily. Carlos, I forced him to go to the doctor. And it turned out he had stage 4 stomach cancer. And the following year, I came, and I was at the airport wondering where he was to pick me up. And I'm looking around. I don't see him. All of a sudden, this guy taps me on the back. And it was him. He had lost like 40 pounds. Now, Carlos was a little guy, probably 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
His hair turned all gray.
Wow.
His skin was all sallow. It almost brought me to tears.
Yeah.
He just looked terrible. But we put on the show. But Carlos died shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
Right around Christmas time of that year.
What year was that, Sam?
That was 1986.
86, okay. So he's been dead quite over 30 years then.
Yeah. But it just took the wind out of my sails. I just gave up.
Okay.
I just had nothing left in me. I'd lost everything.
Yeah.
I all my money, lost my business. My marriage was in disarray, I just was gone. And so I just kind of almost just gave up. I had a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
I sat around. Fortunately, I had some really good friends that got me going again. But I stayed out of the gym business pretty much. Now, the show that I'm talking about with Robbie, in 1971, I believe that was.
Yeah, you saw Robbie when he first started bodybuilding, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I went to that show, and there were only 3 judges.
What show was this now? The Mr. Florida,
It was
right?
Mr. Florida and the Greater Mr. Florida.
Okay.
But there were 3 judges, which is illegal. You're supposed to have at least 5.
Right.
It was Meese, Potter, and Gene Massey.
Okay.
Robbie wins everything. Every body part comes in 3rd. And Kent Keene wins. Now, Kent was good.
Yeah.
But Robbie was better. They didn't want a black guy to win the Mr. Florida. They had the Greater Mr. Florida, which is stupid. All of a sudden, Massey, one of the judges, gets up, enters the contest. There's only 2 judges.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie wins everything. But he wins the Greater Mr. Florida, and Ken King comes in 3rd.
Wow.
God, I can't believe this. Yeah, I just couldn't believe.
So in the early 70s,
they were that blatant about it.
It was still that prejudice.
Yeah. And so that really got me into promotion. And what actually happened was this one gym owner had gotten a sanction for the Mr. Florida, but he chickened out. And one of the people asked me, he said, Stan, would you be interested in doing this? And stupidly, I said, yes. I had no idea what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. I got Frank Zane, because he was a friend, I got him to come and guest pose. Guess what I paid him? I paid him $200 to come and guest pose, and I got a plane ticket. You know, he comes. It turned out as a real success. I said, God, I can't believe this. You know, so then I kept doing it. Of course, I had Waller and Schwarzenegger came down, and I had Schwarzenegger come down when he was filming Stay Hungry in Birmingham.
Yeah, I want to talk to you there about that in a second. Tell me about Robbie when you first saw him. What did you think of Robbie when you first saw him?
Well, you know, I had gotten all kinds of this was a really racist place at the time. I got letters telling me, oh, this guy's a thug, a criminal, he's going to stab you, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And
after the show or before the show?
After the show, because, you know, before I had not seen him, but I looked at him and I said, this guy doesn't belong in Florida. He's too good.
Wow, and, he was that good.
But nobody wanted to deal with him, you know, and he worked in Tallahassee, a minimum wage worker. Mm-hmm. So I had the Mr. Florida in 75, and he entered. And I was really worried because I got all kinds of letters threatening me. I couldn't allow him on the show.
Did you know who was threatening you, or are you just getting anonymous letters?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew. Now, I did something which probably I should have done. When the lineup came up, I put Robbie in the middle of the two worst defenders. They had to stand right next to him and made him look like idiots. You know, but he ended up, he won the show. But Meese and Potter were there, and I thought, God, I can't stand these guys. So I ended up, I would take the winner out to eat, and I took him to Burns Steakhouse, which is one of the premier steakhouses in the United States. I took Robbie in his sweatsuit, my wife, and I had Meese and Potter come, and they were livid. I would have this black man. And so we'd go, had dinner, and they had to put up with Robbie. And Robbie, and this is a steakhouse, ordered a chicken breast with no skin on it and bought a lemon meringue pie and gave it to my wife to eat so he could watch her.
Oh, my God. And, unbelievable.
He was a gentle giant, nothing like what he was portrayed to be. I had Arnold come down and said, Arnold, you got to see this guy. This guy needs to get out of Florida. I see he won't do anything in Florida.
Yeah.
So he says, well, send him to Birmingham. And, of course, Robbie goes. He goes in there. And he says, I'm going to send him out to Joe.
So Birmingham, Alabama was where they were filming Stay Hungry. This is 1975.
Right, yeah.
So Arnold said send him up there because they needed extra bodybuilders for the background, right?
So Arnold's going to send him to California to meet Joe.
Okay.
I told Arnold, I said, Joe, screw this guy. You know, he'll take advantage of him because Robbie's not that smart. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not educated. And he said, no, I'll be there. Well, ends up he's not there. So Robbie signs a personal service contract, which is 5 years long.
Wow. Okay.
And this is a poor black man from Tallahassee. So he gets Robbie a cheap apartment, a cheap car, gives him a little job, making, you know, hardly anything. And Robbie starts making a lot of money for Weider. But guess what? Robbie's still making $200 a week, you know. And he kept calling me and said, Stan, he said, what am I doing? I can't afford to live here, you know. And I said, yeah, I don't know what you can do. But the contract came up 5 years long. So I told Robbie, I said, don't sign it again. But he ended up getting in a big thing with Weider. And all rumors flew that he had called Weider a Jew and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so Weider threw him out of the IFBB.
Right.
Robbie ended up having to go to Europe to live. I believe it was in the Netherlands or one of those places in order to get any work at all.
Wow.
Because Weider had blackballed him.
What was he doing for Weider for a job when he was working for him?
Well, he would do just like disposing and stuff like that. Mm. He just barely making it.
Okay.
But he finally comes back because Weider needed him, and he comes back, and fortunately he didn't sign a personal service contract, and that was always a big bugaboo. And but you know, he's lived in fear all his life because they threatened him. They threatened his life. He's gone through hell.
Robbie?
And, yeah.
Wow.
And of course, now he's dealing with a sickle cell. You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hope he lives through that, but you know, that's real rough. But
Tell me about Frank Zane when you first met him back in the mid '60s or early '60s. What was he like?
Well, you know, Frank is not the friendliest person in the world.
Yeah.
Kind of arrogant. He was a school teacher. He taught math.
Mm-hmm.
I got along with him fairly well. But like I say, he was very arrogant. Not very friendly. But he was good. He was the first guy that actually looked like he had abs. You know, abs were not a big thing in those days.
Right.
He had to have big arms. You know, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he looked really good. And he goes to California, of course. You know, he gets in with Arnold and stuff, and he does well.
And when did he move to California, Stan? Was that like late 60s?
Probably, let me see here. Probably around 64, 65.
Oh, that early. Okay. And he met his wife, yeah. Christine, out in Tampa, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he married Christine in Tampa.
Okay.
Well, actually, he was teaching school in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
He taught math. But he goes out there, and he did well. And at that time, Don Howarth was the guy Weider was sort of pushing, but, you know, Don ended up going to jail, so
mm-hmm.
Frank kind of just became the next guy in line. And
I think Frank won IFBB America the year after Don Howarth did.
Right. And but you know, so many things happen in between here, like when Sprague buys Gold's Gym.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Joe opens up Earl's Gym down the road, and then Schwarzenegger really was supporting Joe, but Sprague takes over. All of a sudden, in the middle of all this, Grimkowski ends up buying it. Now, where the hell did Grimkowski get the money to buy Gold's Gym?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew Pete. I knew he didn't have 10 penny to rub on. You know, so he ends up with this franchise. And, of course, they sold it. You know, Pete ends up with a lot of money. But Pete was, I don't know how you describe him. I hate to call him an addict, but, you know, probably tended towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the corruption was so bad. The gay part of it was big. And it just got to where the corruption was so bad that, you know, people were afraid that they ruined, like, Tufel. Tufel was scheduled to win the Mr. America. Sprague invites him over. Tufel goes over to California.
Mm-hmm.
Sprague tells him, you have to join with us or you'll never win a show again. Tufel said, the hell with you, and he goes back. Well, he never won a show again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just had to play the game. You had to be part of what they had.
Right.
Backstage, one time, Frank Gold and I were backstage. This guy comes up, which I won't mention his name. He asks us if we want to join this gay tour that's out of California. And he actually reaches in our shorts and looks at our shorts, and he starts to describe what we had to do, you know, and Frank and I would just flabbergasted. We couldn't believe this was happening. Wow. But this is exactly what was happening.
That was the scene back then.
Yeah. What's that now?
I said that was the scene back then in bodybuilding.
Oh, yeah. And the other time when Platt was here, living with Juan Valdez, Schwarzenegger comes down, Ken Kane, and Platt's had to go back to California. So we go to the airport. It's a long walkway. Well, Valdez weighed about, close to 400 pounds.
Wow.
And so we're walking to the plane, and he's yelling, "Oh, Platts, I love you, don't leave me," and everything, you know. So Black gets in line to get in the plane, and Schwarzenegger grabs one arm, and I grab the other, and we start walking down to pull this guy away, and this guy's screaming, "I love you, Tom," and we go down about 100 yards, and we let him loose because we figure, hey, he's a 400-pound guy. This guy turned around, and he probably sprinted 100 yards, and jumps over the ring and grabs Tom and starts screaming all kinds of stuff. And I said, "Oh no, what are we going to do?" So we end up having to grab him and pull him away. Well, that night, the phone rings. This guy tries to commit suicide. I had to go call 911 to pick him up. He tried to kill himself. But, you know, it was just so bad. Another thing this guy did, he borrowed some stationery from me. Yeah, I'm thinking, no big deal, I'll give him stationery. Well, what he does, he writes to Disney World and opens a VIP account in my name. See, he takes all these bodybuilders on these tours. I didn't know it. Also, I get a bill from Disney World. And I go, what the hell is that? See, he's been taking all these people, you know, the Disney World on tours and stuff, and I had to pay this stuff. And, God, it was just, John, I don't, you probably talked to people and had some of the horror stories, but let me tell you, the sport just sickened me so much. And they defeated me because it boiled down to money.
Yeah.
We either had the money. You know, if you're not real knowledgeable about lawsuits, you know, you think I'll fight it, whatever. But it basically boils down to, if you got a lot of money, all he wanted to do was bankrupt me, which he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I just gave up. I just, to me, the sport became toxic.
And that's a shame.
Then, you know, talking to Robbie and showing how the drugs had pervaded the system. He was telling about one guy was spending like $100,000 a year on steroids and stuff. And smoke, you know. And I actually wrote two books on steroids because that was one of the things I knew about, you know, from going to school. But I wrote one for Boyer, and then I wrote one with Kent Passarillo.
Yeah.
And, but, God, I can't believe what's going on now. These guys are nuts.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your friend Richard.
About this new one, Trenbolone, which I wasn't familiar with. That's so scary stuff.
That wasn't even around back in the day.
You know, but they're dying in their 30s and 40s.
I know. That's true.
It's unbelievable. You know, it's just unbelievable. Now you mentioned Richard Baldwin. Yeah, I don't know how you feel about the sport. You know, you're around it more, but I talked to Richard. You know, he's sick of it. You know, like he doesn't know. You know, like all the drugs are pervasive. You know, and I go back to Hoffman when Ziegler came and came with Dianabol, and people were taking like one tablet of Dianabol a week.
Right,
you know,
right.
And you go, wow, you know, this is a big thing, you know. And that was it back in those days.
Well, Well, steroids probably weren't around hardly at all, right, when you started in the early 60s.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't remember anybody actually being steroid-free. Probably steroid-free compared to what you see today. But back in those days, one tablet of Dianabol a day was like, wow.
I can't
believe that, you know. And, of course, you know, testosterone started coming around, you know, and things started changing. And, but, you know, the worst thing for me was just the corruption, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs are part of the sport. It's an unfortunate thing, but I would say probably 90% of world-class athletes are on drugs.
Oh, yeah.
If you've been around cyclists, you can't believe what these guys do.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, you know, that's just the way it is right now. It's just so open right now.
Yeah, everybody's trying to get an edge.
These guys actually brag about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Richard Baldwin. You promoted the Mr. Florida in 78, and Richard won that show, right?
Yeah. That was another one. The show that Juan Valdez put on with Sprague and Mannion, they really wanted to push Platts to win. Richard sneaks in, he enters the show. He wins the whole damn thing.
and it pissed
him off so bad that Richard is stuck in and won this thing. He wasn't supposed to.
Right.
You know, and God, and it took the sale out of the Plastics. And also, he competed for legs when they still have subdivisions with Ivor Butcher. Did you ever know about Ivor?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about him because I've heard stories about Ivor Butcher. And
oh,
I heard
man,
he
this, guy, legs. This guy had legs that just wouldn't click. So it ended up him and Platts for the body part.
Uh-huh.
Well, I tell you what, the only reason Platts won was because he was white and Ivor was black, because that was really, really close.
Really? And, I'd love to see that.
You know, I'll send you a picture if you send me your address.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to see that.
I have a picture of it, yeah. But,
wow.
I don't know what I can say, John. It just ruined me.
Yeah.
I'm just now getting back into my wife and I are writing a book. I've actually written about 10 books on Amazon, but we're writing one now. What ended up happening for me, I have multiple myeloma, and going to a gym for me is hard because I break bones really easy.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not used to these, what I call perfume factories, too.
Right, yeah, it's going to be a big shock.
I ended up figuring what I could do at home.
Uh-huh.
Well, I started using bungee cords.
Uh-huh.
And believe it or not, John, if I had back in my competitive days, I think I could have gotten in shape with bungee cords. So we're writing
really
a book, really, for people, you know, my age, people that can't go to the gym, don't have time, to work out at home with bungee cords.
And wow.
My wife is the model now. We're doing a 30-day project like Arthur Jones did with Casey Viator.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever meet Arthur?
No, I wish I would have. I've heard a lot of stories
about
him. Oh,
man. You had to know about this guy. He was
one of
the—
Did you know him pretty good? Because he was in Florida.
Oh, yeah. I knew him well. Yeah. And 19... Well, probably 1960-61, he had made some prototypes of Nautilus, put on a trailer, went out to see Weider, trying to sell Weider on an idea. Weider had nothing to do. He didn't want to have nothing to do with him. Arthur got all pissed off, comes back to Tampa. I actually bought two pieces off of him for $150, a preacher curl and a pullover.
Uh-huh.
But he would brag about... when he was in Africa, he killed mercenaries and he buried them in a pit, you know. And then he had killed a game warden in Louisiana. And
admitting he murdered people.
Oh, yeah. He was a scary guy.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard.
You know, but he almost partnered with me when I was going to put on the Mr. America, because he had probably one of the best TV studios in the world. Better than
yeah, Blair Cooke. Mm-hmm.
And but he wanted to have full control of it, and I couldn't do that, so I let that go. But he was a scary guy, very scary guy.
Now you promoted the contest when Arnold was getting ready for the Olympia in 75, right? He just got done filming Stay Hungry, and he was underweight then, right? He's only like 210 pounds.
Right. But like I say, yeah, he just could never break into the body. He tried with first with Sergio, and it didn't do well with Sergio. Then with Casey, he just could never break into the bodybuilding world.
Who, Arthur Jones?
Really, he got to where he hated bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And, like I say, he was a unique person. Most people should have met. But, just one of those characters in bodybuilding. Has all kinds of characters.
right.
And you fight. Are you out in California?
No, I'm in Tampa. I live in Tampa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Then we have to get together someday.
Yeah. I'm probably right real close to you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just like I said, there's been all kinds of characters.
How did Arnold look at that contest you promoted when he just got back done from doing Stay Hungry?
Terrible.
Really? Oh, terrible.
Absolutely. He only weighed probably 198 pounds.
Oh, my God.
He looked like hell. And but, hey, for somebody, this guy could get in shape. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. You probably never thought he would win the Olympia that year, huh?
I never thought he would win anything. Because when I first met him, his legs were subpar.
Yeah.
He had huge arms, a big chest. But his legs were terrible. I had terrible calves. And all of a sudden, he ends up with super calves. I don't know how that happened. But, he was just driven. I've never met anybody that driven in my life. He was just going to make it. He would do anything, climb over somebody. He would just do anything to win.
Yeah.
And, he was
smart. Can you give me an example of how driven he was? Like, did he do something? Did he say something to you?
Say that again, John.
Arnold, I mean, could you give me an example of how you said he was real driven? Did he, what did he say or what did he do that you said, wow, this guy is, the most driven guy I've ever seen?
One time I met him when he was first dating Maria.
Okay.
And I told him, Arnold, what are you doing? I said, he says, she can help me get ahead. That was all he was looking for. He married into the Schweiger family, and they would help him get ahead.
Yeah.
And he was always that way. He was always trying to find a way to get ahead.
Right,
Got together with Lorimer in Columbus, Ohio, and Lorimer helped him there, too.
Yeah.
And he learned how to use people to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And he used Weider to get ahead.
Yeah.
And, the one thing I can say about Joe was a genius marketer. It was really good. I mean, Ben was another story, but, I don't know if you've heard the story about Ben when he was chairman of the IFBB. It came up for election.
Okay.
And Serge Nubray was going to run against him. Oh, it just incensed Ben that somebody would have the nerve to run against him.
Right.
So he finds out all these porno films that Serge had done and everything, and got himself elected chairman for life. People went along with it. I can't believe it. But they went along with it.
Right,
he became chairman for life, got rid of Serge for a while. He took him back later. But it was just something else. He hated Sergio. Sergio was black.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to get rid of Sergio. And Sergio was actually easy to get rid of because Sergio was a real egomaniac. Arnold just learned to take advantage of him. Back then, posing was different than it is now. And Arnold would talk him into doing things that he was good at, like he'd do arm poses, and Sergio would look at him and think, oh, I'm as good as he is. And he'd do, well, Sergio's arms were not as good as Arnold's, you know. So Arnold kind of just tricked him.
And won.
And Weider wanted Schwarzenegger to win. So, But it's all a game.
What about Abe Cuesta? He was from Tampa also, wasn't he?
Yeah. But, I hate to say the lives have been ruined. So some of you may not know Bob Birdsong. A lot of people were just totally ruined by Weider. Let him die on a hoof, you know, and it was a shame.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. And I understand now Ken Keene is in a wheelchair.
Is he really? Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. But I knew Ken real well. He acted guest post for me once.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I say, John, I don't know if you've been around people that can tell you about the sport, but it's just unbelievable for me. These guys, 5'8", 300 pounds.
I know.
Eating chicken breasts. You know, that's hard to say.
These guys are
just unbelievable. They're just unbelievable.
So how are you doing now, Stan? You're suffering through some health problems yourself, right?
Well, you know, I went back on chemo again because my immunoglobulins were still in a normal range, but they were elevating. And the doctor thought, well, just to be safe, put me on chemo. But I've had every side effect known to man from it. I've had rash. I've had confusion, dizziness. I've been in the hospital several times.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a kicker. This medicine costs $16,100 a month.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Can you believe that? Of course, you know, by the time you get insurance, I mean, if you have insurance, it cut mine down to $2,000 a month.
Oh,
and then I found one of these charity things, and they pay for it, you know, for so many times.
Oh, really?
It's just unbelievable. You know, the medical industry in this country is just...
Yeah, it's insane.
Crazy.
Yeah, I hear it all the time. I know.
But, dude, this is the other thing, John. That medicine costs $16,100 here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's made by Celgene, which is based in Paris, France. Now, if you go to Paris, France, and you get a prescription for this, and you buy it from Celgene, guess how much you pay for it?
How much?
$74.
Oh, man. Unbelievable.
I know.
That's insane.
I can buy it in Cuba for less than $100.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's just, you know, it's a sickening world. You know, it's a scary world.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
You know, where are you working out in Tampa now?
Powerhouse Gym.
Oh, Powerhouse. Oh, Rick Poston's old gym.
Yeah, this is they had one downtown, and that one closed. So this is the Powerhouse Athletic Club. It's on Hillsboro.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that one. But, you know, the people that stuck with me really got shortchanged, like Jeff King. Jeff King was unbelievable.
He was unbelievable.
He couldn't do anything. Waiter would not touch him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a shame.
Yeah.
You know, people like Brian Silk. Brian should have done well, but you know, they just weren't going to make it because they were with me.
Yeah.
It's a shame, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I feel bad about that. I really do.
Yeah, I always think about what Jeff King would have done if he would have went over and competed against Haney in the IFBB.
But one thing I used to tell people when we have meetings, all these bodybuilders would say, oh, how they would get cheated and how they would get screwed and hated Weider and hated Sprague. So I jump in, I'm going to fight. What happens, they all disappear. I just tell them, you guys have big bodies and little balls because they just disappeared. You know, they were afraid that they're not going to win a Mr. Tampa or they're not going to win a Mr. this, that. You know, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I found that the majority of bodybuilders were cowards. There's no other word for it. They're just cowards. Because you figure if Weider did not have the bodybuilders, he couldn't exist. He had to have them.
Yeah.
So if they decided they wanted, when Robbie called me that he carries a gun with him all the time because he's afraid he's going to get mugged or something like that, you know, that's real. That's the way I was.
Mm-hmm.
I one day, the glass front of my gym got all blown out.
Really?
I got threatened. You know, I went through the IRS criminal investigation, which was total misery.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And like
that.
I say, I lost all my friends. Well, imagine if the IRS called you up, John, we're investigating Stan Boyle criminal charges. You don't want the IRS to bother you.
No
way. I don't know the guy. You know?
Right.
And that's what happened. You know, everybody just feared.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm slowly at least kind of dealing with it. You know, I love Richard, and Richard's unique too, but, you know, I love Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie's going through hell, but, you know, Robbie's been a friend for many, many years, and even though, you know, people complain about him and stuff, and, you know, that's neither here or there for me, but this is a true fact. When I got home after my stem cell, I had no hair, couldn't walk. Sitting in my chair, my wife was working, and I was thinking to myself, I can't live this way.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to die. I want to commit suicide. But I wrote letters to Richard and Robbie, and I figured they might not even remember who the hell I am. So I'm sitting in the chair, really about to end it all. The phone rings, and there's this deep bass voice. It was Robbie. He saved my life. He really did.
Really?
And so I owe him that. No matter what I hear about him and everything else, I owe him that. He saved my life.
Right.
And he's always been a friend of my wife, been a friend of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I love him for that.
Yeah, that's great. You're still in touch with him and Richard and some of those old guys from the old days, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, Richard, like I say, he's unique. He's different. He's educated. But, you know, he's sort of lucked out. He was scheduled to win the Mr. Universe in the second year he was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
He was the favorite to win. But somehow he had gotten a girlfriend pregnant and all that happened. And so he ended up, he couldn't train to go to Mr. Universe, but he ended up getting his PhD. So that worked out well for him.
Yeah.
You know? So
it really was
probably the best thing in the world that could have happened.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but, you know, it's like I say, there's so many personalities, Tony Little.
Mm-hmm.
What he went through, he was almost one of the almost beat Lee Haney at the Junior America because Meese and Potter were supposed to put him up over Haney. They chickened out and didn't do it. But he came that close to winning the Junior Mr. America.
Unbelievable.
I know, because you've seen Haney. But that's the way it was, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame that the sport, because it's a sport I loved. I grew up in it, and I never got to be as good as what you were. But, you know, I won my Mr. Tab, the Masters, Mr. Fly. I won little things like that, the Region 4. I won the Junior America class. But I was not as good as what you are, what Richard was, So I ended up getting a PhD too.
Yeah, you got a PhD yourself, right?
Yeah. I have a PhD in physiology.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
It came from Pacific at Caltech, and so, you know, like I said, I've used it to write books, and I'm getting ready to start this new one should be finished in about 30 days.
Oh, really?
If you send me your address on everything, I'll send you a copy of it.
Absolutely, for sure. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Stan. Well, thanks for joining us on the show. I know you didn't want to do this interview, but I appreciate you taking the time to do it. And I hope you're feeling better. Hope things work out for you good. And I look forward to seeing the book.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks for Stan Morey for coming on the show. I know he was a little hesitant in doing that, but thank you for doing that, Stan. And I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And without further ado, I'm going to read this article from, I believe this was the 1976 issue of Iron Man. Yeah, the January 1976. It's called Now That You Have Bulked Up, and it was written by Norman Zale. So here we go. It says, it all started when your training partner mentioned that you were looking bigger in the chest and shoulders. That was the spark that ignited the fire. From that day on, you began using the big muscle exercises with greater regularity. More reps in the squat, heavier bench presses and rowing, deadlifts and cleans, which always seemed to bother your back, suddenly began feeling better. You increased your poundages with every set of every exercise. You went to sleep a little earlier each night and began eating like food was going out of style. In short, you began on a new and more intensive program of improving yourself. It's funny, though, even with the larger measurements and the use of heavier weights, things just don't seem right. You gained almost 20 pounds during the past 4 months, but you just don't have that old get-up-and-go feeling. Your workouts have gotten shorter, no doubt due to the heavier weights I'm using, you tell yourself. You sleep better. Heck, who wouldn't sleep good after shoveling down 3 large meals and 3 quarts of protein malted each day? Those pectoral striations and abdominal cuts that you worked so hard for last summer have sort of gone into hiding. You're moving a little slower these days, too. You used to enjoy finishing off your workouts with a mile run. Now you shun any type of endurance activity because it might interfere with your progress. You don't even enjoy a friendly game of basketball because you get out of breath so soon. Have you gotten the picture? You have passed through the get big at any cost mania when you can see yourself as a blimp and not as an athlete and decide to do something about it. Be honest with yourself. Do you look and feel good? Stop. Don't even try, as this is an almost impossible task. You know when you feel good, tip-top, on top of the world, flexible, enduring, but only someone else can tell you if you are looking your best. Most people, especially weight trainers, have a tendency to rationalize and exaggerate. And trying to determine if you look your best by squinting at your reflection in the mirror can do nothing except delay the inevitable. Ask someone else, anyone else, your wife or girlfriend, your training partner, or the kid that lives down the block, to tell you if you are muscular, bulky, or fat. If you fall into one of the latter two categories, or if you can grab an inch of soft tissue around any contracted muscle, abdominals included, it's time that you start adjusting your training and eating patterns. There are many excellent exercises features in Iron Man. Select the ones that meet your needs and plunge right in. Train hard, fast, progressively, and at least 3 days per week. Train like your life depended upon your workouts. Who knows? It just may. Adjusting your workouts will be the easy part of training back to a better appearance and sanity. Changing the way you've been eating during the past few months will take a certain amount of self-discipline, something that most people lack, but which you, as a weight trainer, probably mastered. Otherwise, you would not be training and planning ahead. One of the first things to ask yourself is, how much weight should I lose? Set some type of goal for yourself. It's easier to walk in a tunnel when you can see the light at the other end. Until you have some reasonable goal, you'll find yourself floundering, not knowing why you've decided to change your training or eating habits. The goal should be something that can be achieved in a short period of time, like losing 5 pounds in 15 days or reducing your waistline by 1 inch during the next month. After you've reached your goal, set another easily reached goal, possibly adding 10 pounds to your deadlift while losing 5 more pounds during your next 3 weeks. Have you got the idea? Keep setting small, easily obtained goals. When you reach those goals, set another goal for yourself. There are many different types of goals, and only you as an individual will know which ones are most valuable for you. If you're determined to bring your weight and physique to where it should be, then you'll have to take charge of what and how to eat. To become deliberate and dedicated and rational about eating. You can't just eat the way that you have eaten in the past or follow old eating patterns or just eat the foods that you like, when you like, or in the quantities you've eaten in the past. Past habits will have to be changed and new ones established if you expect to get the most out of your weight training. Here are a number of things that you must consider. Trimming down is a matter of eating the right foods in the right amounts. Everyone, and especially a hard training weight trainer, needs all the basic foods,
protein, fats, and carbohydrates, plus vitamins, minerals, water, and cellulose or bulk drinks. Avoid crash, lose weight at any cost diets. They're fine if you only want to drop a couple pounds of fat, but if you're training for muscularity while increasing your strength, so it will be necessary to follow a well-rounded diet. More than likely, you will have to experiment until you find the exercise and diet combination that works best for you. Buy yourself a calorie counter and carbohydrate counter for 25 cents at the local drugstore. Try to determine the number of calories you, as an individual, can consume and lose about 1 or 2 pounds a week and still maintain your enthusiasm and drive for working with the weights. It's become popular to count carbohydrates and protein grams instead of calories, but are you willing to live on meat and eggs for the next couple of months? That's what you might end up doing if you don't keep this diet thing in proper perspective. Once you determine the number of calories that you can consume and still lose weight at a slow but steady rate, use your calories wisely. Avoid the foods that are high in carbohydrates and low in nutritional value. Foods such as ice cream, prepared mixes, bread, and flour products, crunchy, munchy type cereals, and snack foods such as potato chips and candy should be on your danger list for the present. Plan your food intake around protein foods. They should have priority when determining how many calories you should ingest. You'll need about 100 grams of protein daily to keep making progress with the weights, although this may vary somewhat with the individual. Get your protein from sources lowest in carbohydrates and calories. Choose from lean meats, dairy products, desiccated liver, and meat protein powders. Twice a day, stir 3 heaping tablespoons of one of the aforementioned powders in water and drink. Granted, the taste isn't exactly the best, as any user of these powders would tell you, but you can get used to the flavor before you finish the first bottle. How about taking tablets, you ask? Tablets are fine. Their only drawback is that protein tablets, pound for pound, cost about twice as much as powder, and tablets don't seem to give you the same satiety feeling that drinking a glass of water and powder does. It's up to you. Take your choice. Carefully select your other foods from fresh fruits and vegetables. Avoid canned foods, as just about all of them are prepared with sugar, and there's no way of telling what else. Limit your whole grains to a slice of bread per day. An egg or two, soft-boiled or poached, each morning should round your food intake. Keep your carbohydrate gram count to about 70 per day. After selecting the foods you require to meet 100 grams of protein daily, select additional foods from the low-calorie vegetables. Those are generally the leafy green ones. Instead of eating just a few different kinds of food at each meal, eat a great variety. You'll have less of a tendency to overeat, and you'll be getting many different vital substances that are required by the body. If you're in the habit of having a protein drink in the morning, add a tablespoon each of raw wheat germ and food yeast to your blender while you're zipping up the mix. Use a small amount of fat each day. The body requires a certain amount of fat, but it should be limited. Use a vinegar oil dressing on your daily salad and have a tablespoon of wheat germ oil after your workouts. This will give you the much-needed unsaturated fatty acids without adding too many extra calories. In addition, this wheat germ oil should help improve your endurance if you're training at a good pace, which generally means that you should not be resting more than 1 minute between sets. When you get hungry and feel that you must nibble on something sweet, turn instead to some protein powder mixed with a 50-50 solution of apple or pineapple juice and water. After drinking, see if you can hold out for another 15 minutes or so, and by that time, your blood sugar level should be up to the point where you can no longer desire any food. Don't make the mistake of thinking that health foods can't make you chubby. While good nourishing foods are necessary for good health, too many good nourishing foods will destroy your chances for obtaining a well-defined physique. Put yourself on a definite eating schedule and eat at the same time every day. Plan your menu the day before, decide what you're going to eat, and then eat on schedule. The times best for eating are going to vary with each person, his school or work schedule, family commitments, training hours, all must be considered. Generally speaking, it's best to have your largest meal in the morning, a small lunch, and then a smaller dinner. However, some weight trainers tend to eat more if they start with a good-sized breakfast. They find that their eating plans are shot for the day if they eat a big breakfast. Some avoid breakfast altogether. Have a protein drink at mid-morning, eat the largest meal during the late afternoon, and have a snack or another protein drink in the evening. Definition comes easily and painlessly with this approach for many. But if they try the traditional approach of dividing up the day's calories into 3 meals and 1, 2, or 3 snacks, they sometimes feel famished all the time due to the fact that there's never enough food in their stomach to give that satisfied feeling. You have to chart your own course, and there are many of them. what works for Arnold Schwarzenegger or Frank Zane isn't necessarily going to work for you. I personally don't approve of the ever-popular all-protein diet as a steady diet. It may help to get that extra measure of definition, but as a steady day-in and day-out type of eating pattern, it can get awfully boring and take the joy out of eating. The high-protein diet with plenty of low-carbohydrate, fresh, raw vegetables balance the diets beautifully, getting many added vitamins and minerals. An exclusive diet of meat, eggs, and cheese is great if your goals are high and you're willing to endure a Spartan-type existence in order to achieve them. Treat yourself occasionally. After a couple of weeks on a definition diet, you'll find that food starts to become some type of mania with you. You talk about food to all your friends and relatives. You think about food constantly, dwelling on all the goodies that you feel you have sacrificed in the name of cuts, lines, shape, and definition. When this begins to happen, watch out. You're beginning to get psyched out by every fat-building, definition-destroying food in the supermarket. It's time to put one day aside each week, maybe Sunday, to have a small meal, note I said small, portion of one of your formerly favorite foods, maybe a slice of apple pie, a small scoop of ice cream, a teaspoon of honey in your protein drink. An item of this type, eaten only once a week, should not affect you in any way if you maintain a strict diet, and it'll give you something to look forward to each week. That is, until your taste for sweet foods has vanished, which should take a couple of months. But don't make the mistake of thinking that if one no-no a week can't hurt, then surely a second one can't do much harm. If you run into this type of situation, then avoid that first goodie because you're like an alcoholic. One treat leads to another, and then you'll find yourself right back to where you started. A number of the top bodybuilders refuse to give in to the temptation and have any high-carbohydrate food because they feel that it's just not worth the effort to control their diets all week, spend hours in the gym working, sweating, and grinding, and then give in to the momentary passing pleasure afforded by a sugary carbohydrate food. Again, you must decide for yourself. Once your goal is in sight and the game's almost won, you'll have a living testimony of the correct type of training and eating for your own body. Stick with it, and those pec and abdominal cuts will be back where they belong. All right. Norman Zale, 1976. So that was old school nutrition. That's how things were back in the days. Obviously, they didn't know as much about nutrition as they would even 10 years later in the 1980s. So that's how it was back then. It was low carbohydrates, low fat, and that meat and water diet or meat and vegetable diet. So that was tough back in those days. And that's obviously why the bodybuilders weren't as shredded and ripped as they got 10 years later. But it was interesting to hear that. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we'll be back next week with another interview. Take care.